Christmas means peace on earth, goodwill to all beings. That's what the angels sang. The Messiah was supposed to be a Savior who would be called Wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, and the Prince of Peace. He was supposed to bring peace to the earth. Turns out, we are the Messiah, and promises of a better world are up to us. We talked about that last week in terms of faith, the first Sunday of Advent, and this Sunday is about peace. So how do we bring peace to earth? What would a consciousness of peace look like? Well, it might look like Nelson Mandela. How interesting that he would die during Advent, the season of preparation for the birth of the Christ, which is the divine in each of us. If I had known in advance, I would have titled this talk, The Unlikely Messiah. Because who would have thought when Mandela was born in 1918, little boy in South Africa, or when he was sent to prison as a terrorist, that bringing at least a measure of peace to the world would be his life purpose. That's why I think that's why we like the story of the manger, too. Because who would have thought a baby born in a stable to an unwed teenage mother would bring peace? Not that the Romans laid down their arms and went home. Jesus brought an understanding that peace lies within. Peace begins in each of us. All of us are unlikely messiahs with a chance to bring peace to earth. I can't be too sad about the death of someone who was 95 years old, who changed a country and millions of lives. I think Mandela already ranks with Gandhi and Martin Luther King. And I know there's been a lot about him on the news, but I thought we might look at his life today and try to connect the dots to see what we can learn about being peace, especially since he didn't start out that way. So we can look at Nelson Mandela and know what's possible for us, because no one is calling him the Son of God or claiming he was perfect or without sin. We can still relate to Mandela as a human and see what we might be able to do as well. So let me tell you a few things I learned about Mandela, and then we'll talk about our own peace consciousness. Nelson was not his given name. It was something like Rolalala, which means stirring up trouble. But a British teacher named him Nelson after Admiral Nelson, and young Nelson Mandela fell in love with British ideas of democracy, and he began to push for that in South Africa, and eventually was labeled a communist terrorist. He might have been a member of the Communist Party early on, and even though the African National Congress was peaceful, Mandela created an armed wing of the ANC. In 1961, he organized a bombing campaign, not to kill people, but to blow up symbolic targets. It was kind of a mess. The only thing that got blown up was one of the bombers. It was not a success, as bombing campaigns go. So he kind of failed at being a terrorist. But he was arrested and tried and sentenced to life in prison for attempting to cause a violent revolution. And he never denied it. On the witness stand, instead of answering questions, he gave a speech that lasted more than 4 hours. And he said resistance was a moral imperative. And he was not a young firebrand at that time. He was 46 when he started his prison sentence. So have any of you been to Robben Island in South Africa? It's where he was in prison. Well, I was curious about it, so I looked at some pictures and brought them for you. It is an island 12 miles off the coast of Cape Town, South Africa. So even if you escape from the prison, you can't get off the island. And it has been used to lock people away for centuries. The Dutch put their prisoners there when they settled in Africa in the mid-1600s. It's been a leper colony. It's been an insane asylum. It has a sinister reputation. But now tourists can visit it. This is my friend Rachel Jones, who is an American journalist based in Nairobi. She met Mandela, and it felt important to her to go and see this place. But it is grim. And Mandela and the other prisoners used to sit in this courtyard and pound rocks into gravel, because his life sentence included hard labor. And he was in prison for 10 years before he became a cause celeb. Nobody had heard of him much at first. The world was changing outside even while he was inside. And I wonder if apartheid would have died so quickly if he had not been in prison, because he became a rallying point, a symbol of the oppression and the need for freedom. VIPs are allowed to go into the cell and see what it was like. This is Barack Obama on one of his visits. He says his very first political action as a young man was to protest apartheid. So it was in this cell that Nelson Mandela was transformed somehow, not embittered but emboldened. We might call it divine consciousness. He wouldn't. He was not religious at all. Yet this is where he gave up his anger and his ego so he could help lead his country and the world to greater peace. He was in this cell from 1964 to 1982, and then he spent 8 more years in other prisons. He said while he was in prison, what he realized, and this was partly because of his contact with the guards every day, he realized white people were just scared. White people were 15% of the population in South Africa by then, and they were scared of losing their way of life, and they were scared that if blacks had any power, all the whites would be massacred. Maybe fear is the opposite of peace. So when he came out of prison, Mandela did not entirely renounce violence. He said he was still prepared to die for freedom and equality. But he invited everyone into conversation about ending apartheid and creating a new country. Blacks, whites, the international community. He believed a spark of humanity could be touched in every person. Just 3 years after his release from prison, he was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. In 1993. But remember, he didn't win it alone. He shared it with Frederick de Klerk, who was at the time the white president of South Africa. And the following year, when Mandela was elected president, de Klerk stepped down to the number two position. Isn't that remarkable? That tremendous release of ego, of the need to be right or defend the way things have always been done. And de Klerk also invited everyone into the process of building a future. So Mandela, in his Nobel acceptance speech, gave de Klerk credit for admitting that blacks had been wronged. Mandela said, "The value of our shared reward will and must be measured by the joyful peace which will triumph, because the common humanity that bonds both black and white into one human race will have said to each one of us that we shall all live like the children of paradise." Mandela probably described his mission less in terms of bringing about peace and more in terms of freedom, equality, human rights, or simple fairness. But in that quote, he's saying, our shared reward must be measured by joyful peace. Peace is evidence of human success. Peace is the result of fairness, equality, all the ideals that we in America claim as well. But maybe the smartest thing Mandela did was to create the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where people got a chance to tell their stories, to bring to light what had happened, to get it on the record so history could not be revised. It was not to pinpoint criminals. It was not the Nuremberg trials. It was to acknowledge mistakes and even atrocities, so they wouldn't happen again. And people were allowed to criticize the African National Congress, too. Instead of civil war, people in South Africa just talked and talked. Muhammad Ali said this week that Mandela taught us forgiveness on a grand scale. Mandela later invited his prison guards to come sit on the front row at his inauguration as president. He talked with his enemies. He had lunch with a prosecutor who once tried to get him executed. And the prosecutor came out of that lunch and talked about Mandela's great humility of this saintly man. So he either changed his mind or he saw where the train was headed. But for Mandela's part, how much courage does it take to go talk to people that you know hate you? Truth, reconciliation, talking, forgiveness all seem to be keys to peace. They are still talking in Germany about World War II and the Nazis. That discussion was led largely by German churches. And they now teach it to their children in schools, the mistakes that their country has made. We do that in unity, too. When a church asks for help in a conflict, the mediators, ideally, help people talk to each other. This church did it several years ago. There's a workshop called Making Peace with Our Past. There are healing circles where people can be acknowledged for whatever hurt them. They get a chance to process, not to figure out who's right and who's wrong, but to tell their stories and to be heard. And it's not easy to give everyone a chance to be heard. You know, when is it called for? Under what circumstances? When does the whole congregation need to talk about an issue, like today's meeting on the pool? And when do you just let your elected representatives handle it? Because they volunteered to dig into details and make decisions, so you wouldn't have to. Whether it's in a church or a family or the workplace or a nation, how can everyone get a chance to talk? And how do you engage the people who want to stay angry? Because often the loudest complainers won't discuss it, don't want to hear any information, much less consider another point of view. And after every meeting I've ever been to that was designed to establish harmony, somebody says, well, people who needed to be here weren't here. And I'm sure there was some of that in South Africa, too. It's still not utopia. Peace is not easy, and not everyone wants it. Mandela served as president just one term and then voluntarily gave it up. He did not solve all the country's problems. When he left in 1998, there was still a very high rate of violent crime. The economy was stagnant, and AIDS was gathering steam at that time. And he had tried to be so reassuring to the white people that he knew were so scared that he was criticized for placating the establishment and catering to the rich while blacks stayed poor and talking too much about forgiveness instead of justice. Jesus didn't leave a perfect world either. Neither did Mother Teresa or Gandhi or Martin Luther King. You do what you can with what you have wherever you are. Desmond Tutu said this week that Mandela was not a better human being than the rest of us, but that he embodied our hopes and dreams, symbolized our enormous potential, our enormous potential. So I've been thinking, what changed for Mandela? He went to prison as a bomber and came out a statesman. Well, 27 years of maturity, but one simple way to look at it is his shift from being against apartheid to being for equality and human rights. He focused on what he was for. He also was not meek and mild. At the personal level, he was married 3 times, the last time when he was 80. He had 6 children. 3 of them died before he did. Internationally, he criticized the United States for imperialism, for human rights abuses. He said the war in Iraq was only about oil. He was on our terror watch list until 2008. He unapologetically accepted support from Castro, Gaddafi, Yasser Arafat. Peace is not transcending the human experience. I've been reading Andrew Harvey, a mystical author, and I've talked about him before. He says there are 2 kinds of mysticism. Transcendent and evolutionary. Transcendent is when you reach enlightenment or divine consciousness and float above your life and call everything an illusion and always seek the light. Evolutionary mysticism is when you find that same connection with your own divinity and then use that power in the human world. The goal is to be transfigured by the divine and then serve as its agent in the world. Jesus is a prime example, but we can see it in some of our contemporaries like Nelson Mandela. He said, "What counts in life is not the mere fact that we have lived. It is what difference we have made to the lives of others that will determine the significance of the life we lead." So when we look at these great human leaders like Mandela, Gandhi, King, who have used their divine connection to better the world, what can we learn for ourselves? What are the common elements of peace? Well, first, perfection is not required. They're just people. Neither is any particular belief in God required, but with all of them there was a sense of mission and purpose. Overcoming fear, and maybe the best way to do that is be willing to die, because they were. Also being cognizant of others' fear. These leaders had tremendous sympathy for people who were resisting change. Releasing ego, fear, anger, the need to be right, and what worked in South Africa was to have that on both sides, Mandela and de Klerk. Talking openly about what happened, truth, forgiveness, greater than the need for punishment. Working toward what you're for, not floating above life, but being the change you wish to see. And what we see is that they were persistent in holding the consciousness, eyes on the prize. They kept living this way even when others didn't go along. We might be criticized, betrayed, even reviled or punished, but they embodied hopes and dreams. To embody means to let an idea live through you, to incorporate it into your being, to become it. The peace we bring through our lives might not be at the global level, although every thought counts. But it might just be creating a pleasant evening at home. It might be refusing to blame someone at work or being a victim of the government. But the questions are the same for us. What do we have to release to be peace? And what do we have to embody? So I think there were six things on my list. Not perfection, but a sense of purpose. Setting aside fear and understanding the fear of others. Understanding other people's fear. Giving up ego. Talking frankly. Knowing what you're for. And persisting even with opposition. Any one of those is a life's work. And you might think of others. What must you release? What must you embody? That's how we reach any vision. We already know we have the inner resources to live in peace. We can be still and know. We are no less the Christ in expression on earth than Jesus was. And that awareness is what we celebrate at Christmas. But our divinity is evolutionary. Knowing it, experiencing it is not enough. We must use it in our human lives to make a difference for ourselves and others. Like Jesus, we were born with the attributes of God. We might be unlikely messiahs, but every Christmas reminds us that our work is to bring peace on earth and goodwill to all beings. So let's take these thoughts into meditation with Kit.
Take a deep breath, please. And a deeper breath still and release. And a deeper breath still. Space. that familiar place that you go to when you are seeking peace. In a hectic day, in the excitement of preparations for holidays, in the busyness of this season where we want to gather, we want to share, we want to be one in physical form with those that we love. Find that place that you step back from in your busy day. In your spiritual practice, when you take that breath, or you light a candle, or the mindfulness bell app on your phone rings. And if this moment is the first time you have stopped to take a breath, take an even deeper one. If there is any nagging thought, anything on your to-do list, any thought of six different places you need to be or want to be, simply let it go. Let them go. And just be here now. Now is all we have. And what I know in this moment of now is that there is everywhere present an infinitely loving and powerful source that moves in and through us and as us. That life force that gives us everything that we need in every single moment, no matter what our minds may say we are lacking. And what I know in this moment is that source and that light and that love simply waits on us to recognize it. And that the power of choice we have to find peace, to be the peace in the world, is indeed a choice. It is a conscious thought. To consciously forgive, to consciously simply choose to let go of the past, and to be in this moment. What I know is that we have the courage, we have the power. We have all the love in the world behind us to make that choice. I see this peace, I see this power, I see this love for everyone in this room, everyone that reaches out in this community, and beyond and beyond and beyond. That light, that power, that love of that source. In every face. And we choose. And we choose peace now. I know that as we turn our thoughts, we are simply just revealing a truth that already exists, already has existed, and always will exist. All we do is simply acknowledge and accept. And accepting peace as the quality that is here and present right now. I give thanks and I just let it be. And I say, and so it is, and take a deep breath, just another big, deep cleansing breath. In that gratitude, join me in